Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Plenty to talk about, just a couple days away from opening day for the Seattle Mariners. ESPN's Jesse Rogers joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Jesse, busy week for you. How's it going?
Doing well. Good to be with you guys.
We are happy to have you. Now, I'm actually going to start with the biggest story in baseball as opposed to starting hyperlocal, that obviously being Shohei Ohtani. We heard that he was going to be maybe answering some questions from reporters. Sounds like he's just releasing a statement. What have you made of this entire story?
Yeah, I think they made things worse by sending the interpreter out there to give one version and then backtracking and giving another one. And, you know, somebody panicked, right? Somebody panicked. So we'll have to see what the bottom line is on this. Look, if he's found the fact that he was gambling at all himself, it's a problem, but not something that isn't solvable in terms of a you know, fine or short suspension. I might be getting pulled over here. Hold on a second. There's a police car behind me.
No worries, Jesse. If you need to hang up, you just let us know.
Yeah. Call me back in a few minutes. I'll let you know how this turns out.
Okay, Jesse, best of luck. We'll call you back.
Okay. Bye.
Hope he's using his hands free.
Sorry. I don't mean to laugh, but
I've never had that happen.
I've never had that. Now, we've had Robert Turbin call us where we're like, yo, Turbo, are you at the barber right now? I've never had a guest get pulled over while we were interviewing him. No, I feel like it's our fault. I feel like it's our fault, Jesse. We're sorry.
You need a hands-free device.
Yeah, you got to go hands-free, brother. What are you doing? Well, I hope we get Jesse back on. Oh, man. Well,
maybe this is the last time we ever hear from Jesse.
Then we just hear, like, breaking story, ESPN reporter. Oh, man. Sorry, Jesse. We'll give you a call back. Oh, we got to cut that sound.
We can isolate that. Over here.
All right. Well, let's just talk about it ourselves. I'll start with the Shohei Ohtani story.
Where do we go after that?
I don't even know.
I feel terrible now for Jesse.
I do too. I feel like I'm not going to apologize when we get him back on, but I do feel weirdly responsible for him getting pulled over. I like that you can hear the police sirens in the background too. It was just a whoop whoop.
We call that getting blurps back home. They blurped you. Better pull over.
All right. Well, let's stick with some baseball stuff ourselves, and then we'll see if we can get Jesse back on. I agree with Jesse that Ohtani's camp, it was kind of a weird decision to put the interpreter in front of people and then have him recant or have him say his story, then they recant it, blah, blah, blah. I don't know that it's a bad move, though it is disappointing for me as a fan to have Ohtani simply release a statement and not answer questions.
That's the safe way to go. They already fumbled this thing, going out there and saying, oh, no, he was just paying back his debt. He was helping his homie out. Oh, no, actually, his homie's been stealing from him this whole mm-hmm, time. I mean, they've already messed this whole situation up. The best thing for Ohtani to do is to sit there and look remorseful and say hello, say goodbye, and let whatever his PR program, you know, put in writing, have them read that and move along with this and kind of just prolong it. Because you know what happens here in this country. The longer it takes really get down to the bottom of it, people start to forget, and then they're just focusing on baseball. And if he goes out there and he's producing, then it kind of softens the blow a little bit. But this is the smartest thing they've done in the past week and a half since this whole thing's been broken.
Someone said about Jesse Rogers getting pulled over while he was on the phone with us, he was actually pretty calm and took it pretty well. I agree. That's a veteran reporter move to be like, and it appears I'm getting pulled over. I'll go ahead and call you guys back.
Oh, yeah. I'd be nervous. Yeah.
I would be, oh my God, what's happening? Hang on one second.
I mean, only time you're nervous if you did something, right?
Well, no. I mean, you're not. It's more of just like you're figuring out what you're doing. I thought that was a pro move. Pro move by Jesse to just keep us updated on what's happening at the situation. He was our reporter in the field.
Yeah.
I can't believe that we are only, by the way, a couple days away from opening day for the Seattle Mariners.
Oh, my gosh.
I was just talking with Mike Salk about this the other day, and I was like, you know, I am, just as I was last year, upset that this team didn't spend more, and I have complained about it before. But I feel like I can only take that complaint too far into the season before you just need to focus on the team you have.
Yeah, I'm done complaining, honestly.
That's kind of where I am.
I'm done because what's complaining going to do at this point? We like to think early in the offseason, us complaining does something, right? The people are talking. We're talking for the people. This, they're going to hear us. They're going to make some moves. They ain't worried about us, honestly. But this is what we do. We sit here and we speculate and we complain and we talk and we praise. We do everything in between. But at this point, I just want to see what the product is and hopefully see what they were hoping they were going to see with these additions. I'm in full support mode at this point. The season starts at the end of this week. Full support mode. There's some things I just want to see. I want to see the pitching be the staff that we've been hearing about all offseason. I want to see Julio look good when it comes to his first pitch decisions. I want to see Ty look slim and hit the ball across the yard, slap it here, slap it there. You just want to see the profile of the team that we've been told we're going to see, because I can't remember within the last 2 or 3 years where they said, this is the team we're putting out there. And then we look at the team, we're like, that doesn't look like the team you thought you were putting out there. So for management's sake and for our sake, I hope that, you know, there's some point.
Jesse's back with us. Jesse Rogers of ESPN, who got pulled over while on the phone with us. Jesse, are you okay?
Yes, I had pulled over to talk to you guys, and these cops pull behind me, and then they come up and they say my registration, my license plate's expired, but it's not. They just couldn't see it. Like, is that what they're pulling? Is that what they're pulling people? Like, the corner was kind of like folded. They couldn't see the. Is that what they're pulling people over for? License registration. Anyway, it's all good. And I was like, I'm parked. What are they coming after me for?
We were wondering. We joked when you had to hang up. We were like, Bluetooth, man, you got to go hands-free. But I will say, Jesse, listeners, very much on your side. We had a couple people say, wow, he was really calm. Well, I was like, he's a veteran reporter.
I was already pulled over. I wasn't doing anything wrong. So I knew it was nothing incredible.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The sticker on my thing wasn't showing exactly. And they thought it was expired. I'm like, no, it's fine. So anyway, all good. Where were we?
We're glad to have you back.
We were trying to tap in on the Ohtani situation. And to start our show, Jesse, I talked about my weekend and how I'm traveling to my son's soccer game, my daughter's soccer game. And dads are coming up to me and just saying, Ohtani? And just expecting like a full breakdown of the situation. And I go, look, there are like 3 or 4 scenarios or possibilities that I see that could have happened or gone wrong. Give us 2 or 3 of what you think could be the situation.
Yeah. So as I was saying, really the worst, obviously the worst case for everybody involved is if somebody, Ohtani or his interpreter, was betting on baseball. That's a whole other thing. If they find it was baseball, nobody has found that. Nobody has found that. If they find it's baseball, that's a big, big problem. Let's assume that it's not. If nobody was betting on baseball, then the worst thing for Ohtani is really going to be a slap on the wrist. Mm-hmm. Let's say they find out Ohtani was actually doing the betting. It's going to be a slap on the wrist. It's just illegal betting in a state that doesn't allow it. As long as it's not baseball, they will say, here's a fine. Don't use a bookmaker again. That's it. If he was lending the money, it's not going to even be a slap on the wrist. You can lend money to anybody you want. So really, it's about his reputation taking a hit more than anything if he's found guilty of gambling on other sports and losing that kind of money. But I feel like his reputation's already taken a bit of a hit because he's associated with somebody that either stole $4.5 million from him or gambled and had to use Ohtani to pay off the debt. So honestly, I don't think Ohtani's in that big of trouble no matter what happens, as long as nobody's found betting on baseball. So I think it's more of a PR thing for him that he wants to save face here. I don't know what he's going to say today, but the fact that the interpreter told a story then went back on it, now how's Ohtani going to, you know, circle that whole thing and come up with something that makes sense? I don't know. But the bottom line is, I don't think Ohtani's going to be in much trouble, even if he was found to be the one gambling.
Hey, let's look at the division before we get to Seattle. How do you see the AL West right now? Obviously, Astros won the year prior World Series. Rangers won last year. Both teams faced off in the ALCS. And Seattle, at one point, was tied with them for first in the division before falling behind. How do you see this entire thing heading into 2024?
Yeah, well, I just wrote something for ESPN.com that's going to run this week that I think Seattle's going to win the division. I think that on the surface, people are going to forget that they missed out on the division by 2 games because they didn't make the playoffs at all. You sort of forgot about Seattle. But look, I think it's not even arguable that right now they probably have the best pitching staff because Scherzer and Verlander are hurt and all that stuff. You know, just starting the season, they're the best on the mound that I can think of. They bolstered their bullpen a little bit with some under-the-radar signings, although Santos is hurt, I know. And yeah, they didn't spend a lot on the lineup. They never do, and I know that's a complaint up there in Seattle. But who knows if the two Mitches can come up with career years. I mean, certainly Haniger did a couple years ago. And Polanco's a sneaky good pickup. There's veteran experience there. There's playoff experience there. I picked Julio Rodriguez to win the MVP. So I'm all in on Seattle. Three consecutive winning seasons. I think it's time to take another step. But, boy, that front office better help them in July instead of the opposite. And that remains to be seen. But I think it's the most rounded, maybe even one of the deeper teams in the division. Now, look, it is going out on a limb to say Seattle's going to win it because Houston is Houston. But I think they have a really good shot.
It's that's refreshing. I'm sure the people listening to our show right now are excited to hear that because we've heard analysts talk about the pitching staff and say, look, this is one of the best, what, top three in the bigs. But for you to say that, look, you predict them to win the division is awesome. Is there going to be an X factor to that? Because you named all the names, right? Julio, Polanco, France, all that. Is there an X factor to this whole situation that you feel is going to put them over the top?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I do think it's one of those offensive guys they brought in. None of them are big names or big stars. Although, like I said, you had a career year there a couple years ago out of Mitch. So if he can return to that kind of glory, what, he hit 29, 39 home runs, whatever it was. I think it's one of those newcomers is the X factor. Take your pick, you know, Haniger, Garber. I don't know if Polanco would necessarily be it, but someone's got to sort of augment the power that's already there and provide something outside of Julio Rodriguez, right? So I would say, yeah, the X factor is one of those offensive players kind of having a career year either again or their first time ever, whatever the case may be, because it doesn't feel like as is coming off of last year they were good enough, and they didn't go out and sign Bellinger or one of these big bats. So one of these guys has to have a career year. That's my X factor.
Now, we know that Julio isn't going to be an X factor because that's kind of the factor, right? That's the chicken in the chicken noodle soup. But, you know, what's so funny is I spend so much time focused on all the new pieces and all these little questions that I kind of forget about the superstar that they have. And they haven't had someone like this for so long, not since I was like a kid. I'm really interested, Jesse, just as I always am, to hear from a national writer's perspective what you think about Julio. And I know that you know he's a star, but, like, what's his ceiling like? What are you thinking he can do this year?
Yeah, with Ohtani out, I mean, he's got a shot at that MVP if he has one of those career years. I mean, those players have unbelievable ceilings. They don't always reach them every single year, though. I mean, even Bryce Harper's had some volatility in his career. But you know that if they play at their peak, they're MVP caliber, 4 or 5 tools, that whole thing. So I think it's time for him to put it together and have that kind of an MVP caliber year. He's got that talent. He's got some protection around him. I wish it was a little bit better. But look, he's one of the better players in the league that has really yet to hit his peak. So I'm predicting that this will be his year to do that.
Expectations are high on with the Mariners, and I think it might not be fair in some people's eyes because they look at the moves that they made and say, look, they haven't done enough. They haven't done enough. How does service help this team get to that next level? Obviously, we focus on the players a lot, and we should, but how does service play a role in this?
Well, he knows the team up and down, right? I mean, 3 consecutive winning seasons. He understands – he's got to understand what the holes were and where the needs are and all that stuff and what buttons to push. I mean, that's the benefit of continuity. But I still think it is those veteran players they brought in that should help them get over the top. Garber, Haniger, Polanco, as much as service. I mean, he's a pretty steady hand, right? I mean, he gets into the conversation for manager of the year here and there. He's done fine, you know, but they have to get to another level. He's not certainly a manager that's held them back, but let's see if he's got some special sauce in him to take them to another level. And again, he knows the organization up and down. That's the beauty of having the same manager. You know, there could be a point in time where they say, wait, we've plateaued with this guy. We got to go somewhere else. But I don't think we're there yet. But this is a big year for service and the organization. I think we would all agree with that.
Absolutely. He is ESPN's Jesse Rogers, kind enough to join us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. And Jesse, even though you did get pulled over, we know that you're innocent. It's not your fault. Make sure you're reading Jesse's work regularly at ESPN.com. Jesse, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jesse.
You got it. At least they didn't take me in. Take care.
See ya. All right, let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
X's and O's talk, Michael Bumpus. First down, what's something the NFL's concerned about but you feel they shouldn't be?
They're concerned about the dip in scoring. You know, they're saying, like, people want to see touchdowns. I understand that. Okay. So in 2020, the average combined score for the NFL was 49 points per game. 21, you go 45. 23, you go 43.7. And then 2023, you go 43.54. They're concerned because in the 70s and 80s, it was very low scoring. So then they tried to change things to make it more beneficial for the offense. And the reason why I think they shouldn't worry too much about it, because they're still growing in numbers. Viewership is still going up. And I understand you want to see more scoring, but what does that do? It makes the competition committee change rules, like the hip drop. I'm all for banning the hip drop, but a lot of the NFL players are against that. And then I look at, okay, in the past four seasons, you've had two guys throw for over 5,000 yards. Last year, you had a couple guys with 1,700 yards receiving. The year before that, in 2022, you had one guy with 1,800 yards receiving. Before that, another 1,800 yards receiving. The leaders when it comes to offense, in 2023, Miami averaged 401 yards per game, 22 KC with 413, 21 Dallas with 407, and in 2020, KC with 415. These numbers just tell me big plays are still being made. The ball's being pushed down the field. The numbers in viewership are still rising. They are not dipping. Don't mess with it. Just leave it alone. You have to review some rules at the end of each year because you're trying to make the game better and safer. I understand that. But when I start reading things that the NFL is concerned about the dip in scoring, that makes me think they're gonna do a bit too much. Mm-hmm. The game is in a good place right now. You got to tweak some things. Don't worry about the scoring. Everything's going to be fine.
Also, I'm sorry, NFL, but last year you had like a record number of backup quarterback center games. You lost several starters. You got several injured offensive stars. And also, there were just great defenses. It was like the year of the defensive coordinator for a minute. Just let it be.
Yep.
Second down. TJ Watt's hoping Russell Wilson and Justin Fields can help him do something he hasn't done before. What is it?
He hasn't won a playoff game. Six-time Pro Bowler. Four-time All-Pro. He has not won a playoff game. In 17, they lose to Jacksonville. In 2020, they lose to Cleveland. 21, lose to KC. And then in 23, they lose to the Bills. So that got me thinking. I go, all right, he's never won a playoff game. There has to be some guys who never even seen the playoffs before. So I looked up a list, and the names on this list is crazy. Dick Butkus never saw a playoff game. Gail Sayers never saw a playoff game. The great Joe Thomas, who's about 100 pounds lighter now, never saw a playoff game. And you got guys also like Brandon Marshall who never saw a playoff game. This is tough. This lets you know just how important it is to build a great team. We talked about earlier, are the Seahawks a playoff caliber team? And we went through all the names and situations to where maybe quarterbacks who aren't or aren't Hall of Famers got to the Super Bowl. There are greats who will never see the playoffs in the NFL. So, JJ, I feel for you. Or TJ, sorry. TJ, I feel for you, man. I hope it happens for you. I hope Justin Fields and Russell Wilson battle this thing out and put you guys in positions to get to the playoffs so you can win. But it's hard out here, man. Don't forget that. Pat Mahomes, Tom Brady, they make it look easy. It is tough.
It's like when, very obviously a different player on the other side of the ball, but when Brandon Marshall came to Seattle and had he never been to the playoffs or never won?
He's never been to the playoffs.
That's insane. Like, never. Imagine being like a six-time Pro Bowler, or which is the case for Marshall, or like an All-Pro, and you have never been to the postseason. Because you're it. You're all your team has.
Yep.
Third down. Why do you feel the Commanders and Patriots are playing their cards perfectly?
I mean, because it's all fake news. The Patriots, Coach Mayo is saying, oh, I'm up to listen for trades, you know, for the number two spot. And so are the Commanders, or excuse me, number three. The Commanders are saying the same thing about the number two spot. This is what you're supposed to do. But we both know both of these organizations need a franchise quarterback. And I think this is a pretty good draft class when it comes to quarterbacks. They're going to get either Caleb Williams, Daniels, or Drake, however they rank these guys. The only guys I feel like that can offer them enough to move into their slots is the Minnesota Vikings with the 11th pick and the 23rd pick. But even if you do move back to 11, you're probably not going to get the guy. But this is what you're supposed to do as an organization. Make it sound like, hey, we're up. We're going to listen. And they are going to listen. And maybe somebody gets at him with an unbelievable type of trade, and it sounds all good, but me, I don't see it happening. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to stay in their spots. They're going to pick their quarterbacks. They're going to try to build for the future. They've had decent offseason so far. Don't mess it up by moving back to 11, and now you're stuck with maybe a Bo Nix, a guy that you're not really high on, or Michael Penix Jr. I think both those guys are good, but apparently across the league, there's about five guys better than them.
Fourth down. Quandre Diggs had an interesting tweet about the Hawks. Fill us in.
One thing I love about guys not being on the team anymore, whether it be the Hawks or the Mariners, is that they're more inclined just to get stuff off their chest. Mm-hmm. And that's what Quandre did with a tweet. He goes, the Hawks pretty much lost their identity when Chris Carson was no longer on that football team.
Oh.
So what is the identity with Chris Carson? I think he was the guy on offense that was the tough guy, that will lower his shoulder and set the tone with his physical type of play. It's crazy hearing a defensive player say that mm-hmm. the guy on offense was the one who set the tone for this type of physicality, because typically it's the defense. So how do you get back to that? How do you get back to that mm-hmm. physical type of personality? Or is that even what Mike McDonald and Ryan Grubb want to be? It's going to be interesting to see the shift that is made. I think with Ryan Grubb being the offensive coordinator over there, it'll be a bit more finesse. They're still going to run the football. He showed at University of Washington. He will run the rock. But I think they're going to spread the game out a bit more. So what is their identity going to be on offense? I think it's going to be multiple play action, throw the football, you still run the rock. You want to be balanced, right? But I don't think they're going to be the Chris Carson type of personality anymore. The bigger question is, what's your personality going to be on defense? What are you going to get out of your linebackers? How are you going to use your safeties in the box? How often are you going to blitz these guys? There's so many questions that are going to be answered. So when Quandre put that out there, I go, man, that's a new way to look at this whole situation, because I never heard anyone say Chris Carson was the identity of this football team. It's refreshing to hear that it's on the offensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. But at the running back spot, you can be the physical type of runner. Let's see what type of offense and defense we get in 2024.
I think players just respect that physicality, too. Like, yeah, you're always going to get players that are like, hey, you know, our star quarterback is, you know, it. Like, he's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But guys love a physical running back. Like, there is just a universal respect from players on either side of the ball from a running back who can just plow through dudes. I would almost love for the identity as a whole for the Seahawks to once again be defensive. Mm-hmm. I just unfortunately think they're so much closer to it being an elite offense than a defense. But I hope I'm wrong. Mike McDonald, being a former defensive coordinator, kind of changes that and maybe, you know, hastens that improvement, but it feels like there's so many pieces away from them being the defense that I want them
to
be.
No, I think you're right. I think they're going to be more of an offensive team, and simply because Mike McDonald has to teach Dirty his ways. For 2 to 3 seasons, Mike McDonald's going to call the defense because he has to teach Dirty. Mm-hmm. So as soon as Mike is able to kind of step back and kind of just oversee everything, which he's already going to do, I think you got to lean on the side of the football that's been more productive the last couple of years.
You're listening to Bump and Stacy on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. There has been great play happening in the women's NCAA tourney as well, but unfortunately, more recently, it's been overshadowed by a very weird back and forth. Do I even call it a back and forth or just shots fired between LSU's head coach and the Washington Post? We'll tell you what you need to know next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacy, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your timeline. And of course, you've been seeing all this stuff about Kim Mulkey. So here's what you need to know. The Washington Post is rumored to be dropping a juicy story on LSU women's head coach Kim Mulkey soon. So there's some anticipating it could be this week, as early as this week. I'm kind of hoping it's this week because they've been working on this story for 2 years. Kim Mulkey, not happy about it. And I'm very curious to know what the heck is in this story and what the heck they have on her. Kim Mulkey has been trying to get out in front of it.
No, listen, man, we're not gonna let one sleazy reporter distract us from what we're trying to do. Absolutely not. My kids didn't even know I said that yesterday. That team's not involved in this. They were in shock when they saw all that on the internet. I don't take that stuff to my team.
Now, one thing she also said was hey, after 2 years of trying to get me to sit for an interview, he contacts LSU on Tuesday as we're getting ready for the first round with more than a dozen questions demanding a response by Thursday, right before we're scheduled to tip off. And she's like, are you kidding me? She did get some flack for that, though, Bump, because someone said, so wait, first part, though, he's been trying to contact you for 2 years?
Yeah. You can look at it that way and say, well, what is she hiding? Or you can say, she's not going to give this any of her energy because they have nothing on her. But then when she seems like she's getting out in front of this whole thing now, and now she's trying to protect herself. We shall see, man. And honestly, if a reporter wanted to talk to me about something controversial before a game, I ain't talking to him neither. I got bigger things to worry about. I got to make sure my girls are on point. There's been some drama with us and other teams. That LSU team has so many big personalities, including their head coach. Mm-hmm. You got to try to focus on some things. So we got to wait and see with this one. Whenever someone is doing a story on you or trying to develop something for 2 years, they feel like they have something. So we'll see. I'm curious because I don't know the integrity of this reporter. And honestly, just what I know of Coach, I feel like she could put herself in some compromising situation just because of her personality. But we don't know. I'm interested. I want to see.
The reporter, it sounds like, his name's Kent Babb, and I was looking him up earlier because I hadn't heard about him. It seems like he's very well-respected and has been working for a very long time on this story. Another part of Kim Mulkey during this press conference was her saying she obviously knows this is going to be a negative story, but that if you're only reaching out to talk to people who are disgruntled and unhappy with the program and not to get quotes and anything from people that have loved being in the program, like she was heavily implying that this is just an article where Kent Babb had something in mind and was looking to support that with stuff. I'm still very curious to know what it is. I think it's perfectly possible that we see a story where Kim Mulkey crossed what we all have as a universal line and we think, shame on her, that's really bad. I also wonder if there's a world where we just see a very strict, old-fashioned, cutthroat, hard blank coach that we find out that she's exactly who we thought she was. Like, there's just coaches like that in sports.
I mean, there are a few things that I think would damage a coach, right? It's recruiting violations. It's betting. We're waiting to see what Ohtani has to say about that. It's horrible conduct in the workplace. And there are a few things where you can go and you could try to destroy a coach. But there are other things. If you just don't like her personality, then you don't like her personality. There are people around this this world who don't like me. You know, there are people who don't like you. And if you go to the right people, you can build whatever story that you want. Mm-hmm. But the thing that has me waiting with anticipation is this 2 years you've been trying to do this thing. Mm-hmm. So what you got? Let's see.
Yeah, what story took 2 years? I am fascinated to see what comes out from this. And unfortunately for Kim, her talking about it and trying to get ahead of it has only made more people aware that there's this story maybe coming out this week.
What would you do, though? Would you just sit back and say, all right, let's wait for this to drop? I would try to get in front of it, too.
I try to avoid the Barbara Streisand effect of, like, drawing attention to something by kind of unintentionally doing it yourself, like that by talking about it, more people are Googling it and looking it up. I think it's very natural to want to defend yourself. I am guessing that she, I would wager that there are multiple sides to the story.
Definitely.
With anything in here, you know what I mean? And that there are probably a couple sides that aren't included in the story that aren't being told, and that she's probably feeling defensive about that.
Yeah.
You know, but
it's her personality leads to make you believe there's something because she's not like a soft person. She's not.
Right.
She just isn't. So it's the perfect storm for us to sit back and wait with anticipation.
And we will absolutely be talking about it when this story finally comes out. Next up, Deion Sanders is already threatening to have his son, Shador, and star Travis Hunter pull an Eli Manning in next year's NFL draft.
Where do you predict Shador and Travis going in the draft?
Top four.
Ooh, that's beautiful.
Anywhere from one through four. One of them is going to be one.
Mm. That's what I'm talking about.
One of them is going to be
speaking into existence.
And the latter one would not go behind four.
Mm.
Now, all this is subjective because I know where I kind of want them to go.
Mm-hmm.
And let's not forget Shallow, okay? Mm-hmm. But I know where I want them to go. So there's certain cities that ain't going to happen.
Okay, you on point.
It's gonna be a. It's not. A, I'm sorry. It's gonna be an Eli.
What do you think?
I think that he's got to go out and ball out this year. You didn't enter this draft because you knew what you're up against as far as quarterback talent. The next draft isn't going to be great. I'm looking at his schedule. You got to play, I guess, tough games, predicting tough games. Nebraska, we'll see. Baylor, Kansas State. I mean, you're in a whole new conference, which might help you because there's no real familiarity, even though there's film out there. But for him to have that type of leverage, he's got to go out there and ball. The thing they have on their side is that they got one of the greatest football players of all time who has connections to every NFL team out there and has influence where he can kind of dictate what he wants to do. But if Shador goes out there and doesn't look like a top three, top four quarterback in the league, then what leverage does he really have? At that point, you become one of the average guys, if we're going to call them average, trying to get into the NFL, where you should just be thankful. But he has a privilege. His dad is one of the best to ever do it. Mm-hmm. He has a huge personality. He's making it known that he's going to try to control the situation. And the pushback of that is going to be what team is going to want to deal with Deion Sanders. If they do get Shador and things aren't going right, he's going to be all up in the news, saying everything he wants to say, calling who he wants to call. He has access to every GM in the NFL. It's a situation I don't think we've ever seen before.
It would be even more interesting if Shador had an even greater college resume. He will be he's the best quarterback in this upcoming class for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't me taking away from anything. And I actually really like Deion Sanders. He's a huge personality. You either love him or you hate him. I totally get it. I tuned into the first game Colorado played back against TCU, just like we all did, because we were fascinated to see what would happen. Like, I get it. He makes headlines. He makes stories and we follow them. If I were an NFL GM, I would be nervous about taking any player that had a helicopter parent with that much power.
You'd be nervous about it, but if they're ballers, you'll deal with it. That's what everything else. If you can provide a service or do something better than anybody else, there are things that people are willing to put up with. So that's to help this situation, Shador just go ahead and ball. The more he balls, the more control Deion and his camp can have about where he ends up. So, I mean, and what teams would he really be talking about? We're talking about the Bears. They're going to take a number one quarterback. We're talking about the Carolina Panthers. We'll see what Bryce looks like over there.
Maybe a team from the NFC South, I would guess, is in there somewhere.
We're talking the Saints, maybe the Bucks. I mean, good. Goodness gracious. It's the fact that Shador's in a position. Shador put himself in this position too because he did have a good year last year.
Yeah.
But the fact that he is in a position to kind of dictate where he wants to go is a privilege that not too many people have. And what do? You want the best for your kids. Mm-hmm. If I could provide the best life for my kids, the best playing scenarios, whether it be college or the pros, I would definitely do it too. So we can knock Deion for taking this route, but we're not in his shoes. And I feel like if we were in his shoes and had control over a situation like that, we'd probably do the same.
All right. Very last story here. Actually, do we have enough time? We'll be fast. A ref was removed from the women's NCAA tourney in a game between NC State and Chattanooga because apparently the ref in question had graduated from Chattanooga. I don't know how this was missed. I think it was because it was a master's program as opposed to like being from the undergrad there. But anyways, they switched the game officials at halftime.
Someone just looked up the resume. Oh, who's this? This ref we have out there, actually.
Wait a minute.
The one sub ref who was not expecting to play, who probably had some popcorn and beer after the game, was like, oh, snaps, I'm live. I'm in the game.
Just high-fiving players. Nice. Keep it up. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. All right, we are going to get to know Huskies men's basketball coach Danny Sprinkle with Scott Gerard, who's play-by-play for Utah State. He has tons of insight into Danny. He's going to join us at noon. Before we get to it, the biggest surprises and best moments from opening weekend of March Madness. What stands out to you? That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
We're going to get to know new Huskies men's basketball coach Danny Sprinkle. Scott Gerard is going to join us in 15 minutes. He's a play-by-play man for Utah State Hoops and knows Danny well. So we're going to ask him lots of questions about UW's newest coach. Before we get to it, let's talk the opening weekend of March Madness. Bump, I'm a ball knower. In our work bracket, my bracket is currently tied with Simeona, who's in digital behind the scenes, and Taylor Jacobs, who you guys know, currently behind the glass in the control room for first place. Why you look so tired? Let me brag about this. Because here's
because
the deal.
Because I know the truth about it.
Okay, what's the truth, Bump?
There ain't no chance you can win this thing.
I think that you're...
There's no repeat
going
on.
Not with that attitude. I unfortunately took Kentucky to go all the way. And so it is impossible for me to win because Tay also has UConn. But for right now, I'm in first and I got to brag about it. But for I bring up my bracket to brag. Yes, I have a problem with attention seeking, but also to say that my pick for biggest shock of opening weekend of March Madness in the men's tourney is obviously Kentucky being ousted. That is my pick. Just bar none for the moment that I could not get over. And what's going to happen with Calipari? And what's going to happen with all these moves? And like just Kentucky fans losing their minds. Would that be yours? Biggest shock?
Yeah, I mean that's the easy one, but that's it. I mean,
yeah,
Oakland. I thought we were talking about Oakland, California. I wasn't even thinking about the right Oakland. I'm like, Oakland CC got into the tournament.
Like, what? Let's go, Cali.
What happened? And then I'm listening to Calipari's. It wasn't like the presser, but you know when they talk to him in the
locker room,
yeah, and he's just throwing guys under the bus. Mm-hmm. All right, we had guys not show up, and I go, Coach, you've been at this a long time. All right, and you've had the privilege to coach at the University of Kentucky. You've earned that privilege, right? Mm-hmm. You were balling at UMass and did everything that you were supposed to do to put yourself in this position. This is when you become the father figure for these young men. And you just take all the – I didn't get these guys ready to go. This is on me. Even if it's not, that's what the good coaches do. Because at the end of the day, if your players aren't performing on the biggest stage – it's partly your fault.
Mm-hmm.
And we're learning, Stacey, when you weren't here on Friday, Curtis and I had this conversation about who was it, the analyst who said it's hard to win with these freshmen.
It was Jay Wright.
Jay Wright. It's hard to win with these freshmen now because now you're going up against guys who have these NIL deals who are going to stay for a little longer, and they are seasoned. Whether they play for Oakland or Seattle U, it don't matter. They're going to play ball, and they're going to look at this 18-year-old who's going to make millions in the league and say, I still can't go against you because I'm a seasoned. I got grays in my beard. You know, I've done this before. That was the thing that baffled me a bit is that I don't see the same Calipari I saw early in his Kentucky mm-hmm. career. The fiery, the it's on me. I'm going to get these guys ready. It was more like nonchalant. And I'm looking at his body language and his tone and how he's speaking, and I'm thinking – the alum at University of Kentucky have to be almost tired of this. Luckily for him, his buyout is $33 million. Are you willing to put up $33 million to get him out of here? No, but I think he's still a good coach. I just think something's got to be tweaked a little bit. So, yeah, that was the biggest one for me. Seeing first knowing that Oakland was not Oakland, California, and then knowing that Oakland had a kid who went 10 for 20, didn't shoot one two-pointer, lit him up, and took out the Wildcats.
Do you have another takeaway, or do you want me to get my second one and then throw
get
you
your second
it?
One.
Okay, because I'm just throwing to you for these. You got such good analysis for it. I've got, like, the basic level takeaway, and then I want to hear what you think. My second one. Whoo, man, is it fun to see the SEC fall so hard on their face. The Pac-12 cleaning up. Yes, some of those teams have since been eliminated, but Pac-12 was perfect through the first round. And then obviously SEC, just one team advancing, right? One, two.
I don't know.
The SEC teams were just dropping like flies.
No, I love that. And you know what I love most about that is that Oregon State and Wazoo get all that money.
Yeah.
Because we are the only two left in the Pac-12. You get X amount of dollars for every game your conference team wins. Yeah, that's big. And selfishly, I'm just thinking about us and OSU and saying, good for us. All right. And WSU contributed to that because we got a win as well.
Mm-hmm.
Another surprise to me was knowing that number 11 Duquesne is spelled the way that it's spelled.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking at that. I go, they keep saying Duquesne. I go, you spelled it wrong. That's not how that's spelled.
It's a typo.
What's going on over there? But they got to win. They beat BYU. That was one of the better games, too. I think we were here for that. They were playing. That's a big win. I mean, it was more just the pronunciation of that school's name rather than any of the results. Because the biggest one had to be that. The Cougs almost losing to Drake scared me a bit. We knew that Drake was going to be tough. I think you pointed out they won 11 of their last 10 games going into the tournament. A different type of team. We spoke to Kyle Smith, I believe, and he told us that, look, they haven't really seen a team like that in Pac-12 play. So seeing my Cougs, you know, take it down to the wire with that one was a little scary. But honestly, this has been – I don't think it's a bad tournament. But like you pointed out earlier in the show – I mean, the Sweet 16 is full of just heavy hitters, man. I mean, the guys who are supposed to be there are there. all four number ones are there. Duke is there. Mm-hmm. Arizona is there. Marquette is there. Your girl who was pumping up NC State is there. It's not a boring tournament, but we're used to seeing a bit more chaos.
The last bit I have, though, one team that it should never surprise you when they're in the Sweet 16, though we were having a narrative of them having a down season, the Zags are hot. Zags are hot
right
now.
Ninth straight Sweet 16.
Whew.
Crazy. I think the next highest streak of consecutive Sweet 16s, I think, is Houston with four. So, yeah, Gonzaga... Apparently they're chokers, but nobody else has gone further than them consistently.
And you said they've got Purdue coming up here?
They do have Purdue.
That's going to be tough because I know Purdue got a lot of flack two of the last three visits to the NCAA tourney. They lost in the first round when they were supposed to be so great. This year's Purdue team, also a number one seed, also had a lot of traction, but they're a better team overall. Like I know that they'd kind of gotten, you know, been on the unfortunate end of like really well-known upsets and everyone kind of poking fun, but this is a good Purdue team this year.
Sorry, Mike Lefko. Purdue's going down.
You're taking the Zags.
I'm taking the Zags. Got to stay local. Shop local. Go Zags.
Go Zags. I took the Zags, too. It's hard not to. You got to go local. All right, you guys. Well, speaking of going local, we're heading to Seattle, heading to Montlake, getting to know new Huskies men's basketball head coach Danny Sprinkle, Scott Girard, Utah State play-by-play man, joining us next.